Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Wedge's Gamble, Book 2 of the X-Wing series by Michael A. Stackpole. Even before his X-Wing sensors had time to scan and identify the new ship, Corran Horn knew it was trouble. That knowledge was not based on the ship's unscheduled reversion to real space in the Pyrea system. In the months since the Rebel Alliance took the planet Borlaeus from the Empire, more ships than Corran cared to remember had popped in for a quick survey of the place. Some were on diplomatic missions from worlds that had already joined the New Republic. Others had been sent by the rulers of planets who wanted to separate fact from propaganda before they decided if they wanted to shift allegiances in the Galactic Civil War. Others had been Imperial vessels on reconnaissance missions, and a goodly proportion of the rest were Alliance ships with legitimate business in the system. All of them had to be checked out, but the patrols had produced no serious incidents or fatalities. This spawned a complacency among the pilots that was not conducive to long life. But even Corran had found it hard to keep his edge when no serious threats presented themselves. The arrival of this new ship, Vengeance Dera IV, slashed away his peace of mind like a vibroblade. The sensors reported a modified freight cruiser that had entered the system on the course and at the speed the rebels had dictated for freighter traffic. But during his brief career hunting smugglers and other criminals in the Corellian Security Force, Corran had learned to trust his gut feelings. His father and his grandfather, both Corsac officers themselves, had encouraged him to follow his instincts in dangerous situations. Corran keyed his comm unit. Rogue 9 to Champion 5. Wait here with 6. I'm going to do a flyby.
I copy 9, but they aren't in the challenge zone yet.
Humor me, 5. The system patrols had been broken up to cover 4 zones around Borlaeus. Corran and 2 Y-Wing pilots from Defender Wing had by far the busiest sector. Whistler, see what you can do about boosting our sensors to pick up any anomalous readings from that freighter. The green and white R2 astromech droid splashed a report onto Corran's primary monitor. The freighter was a Rendili Star Drive design. It shipped roughly 1,500 metric tons of equipment, ran with a crew of 400, and had 9 quad lasers as well as 1 tractor beam that could pull salvage into the belly storage area.
Champion 5 here, Rogue 9.
Go ahead, 5.
I challenged the Vengeance and it answered with a code that is good.
Did they get it on the first try? 5's comm unit didn't filter the surprise out of his voice.
No, second pass, why?
I'll tell you later. Stay where you are, but get someone to lift from Borlaeus in an assault shuttle. You and 6 be ready for trouble.
As ordered, 9.
Corran read Whistler's question on the monitor. Yes, I think it's exactly like the double-taker case. Back on Corellia, he and his partner, Ayala Wasiri, had investigated a series of burglaries in houses where there were no signs of forced entry. The key to cracking the case was discovering that the ROMs used in the security systems all came from the same manufacturer. When a particular password was used on the locks, the system would spit out the correct password. On the second try, the thief would enter the correct code, get in, and rob the place. Corran punched his comm unit over to the frequency the freighter was using. Vengeance Dera 4, this is Lieutenant Corran Horn of Rogue Squadron. Stop now. Stand by for boarding. The freighter did not even slow, much less stop.
Is there a problem, Lieutenant?
Corran sent a quad burst of red laser fire across the ship's bow. Vengeance, stand by for boarding. There will only be a problem if you make one. The freighter began to roll to port, exposing its top towards Corran's ship. 5 and 6, link proton torpedoes on the freighter.
9, they've done nothing.
Yet five. Yet. Swinging up and around from the belly of Vengeance, four TIE starfighters raced in towards Corrin's X-Wing.
Nine, do you see the two TIE bombers coming in behind the eyeballs?
Five, fire on the Vengeance, then take the dupes. I've got the eyeballs. Let Borlaeus base know we have trouble. Corrin knew the Y-Wings would have little trouble outflying the dupes, pilots laying for the double-hulled bombers. If he could keep the TIEs, or eyeballs, occupied, they wouldn't be in any position to harass the Y-Wings. He dove into a long loop that took him down to where Vengeance's bulk hid him from the TIEs. Rolling his ship and applying some rudder, he arrowed straight in at the freighter. This put him in position to watch as the quartet of proton torpedoes launched by the Y-Wings exploded against the shields like a star-going nova. Corrin sent a quad burst of fire toward the ship's bridge. Without waiting to see if it hit, he barrel-rolled, moving toward the middle of the freighter. An eyeball streaked over the freighter's edge and right into his sights. Corrin triggered a quad shot that caught the eyeball on the port side, slicing the hexagon into a dozen or more pieces. Adding a bit more to the starboard roll and pulling back on the stick again took him out past the ship's damaged bow and let him swoop in on the tail of another TIE. He fired twice, and an explosion blew the fighter apart. Five, report!
One dupe dead, one sleeping. Nine, the freighter is turning to run. Do you want help with the eyeballs?
Negative five. It's not that I think I'm that good, Whistler. It's that I know they aren't. Refusing help when outnumbered by enemies was usually ascribed to egotism or terminal stupidity. But Corrin had a third reason. The Y-Wing pilots, while enthusiastic and decently trained, were insufficiently experienced in dogfighting to be much help. If they entered the fight, he'd have to worry about hitting them. Five, hang off there and try for torp locks on the TIEs. Glancing at his sensor displays, he marked the position of the Y-Wing, then rolled and dove. Angry green laser bolts slashed through the blackness in front of him, but neither of the TIEs' shots hit. The two eyeballs looped up and around, then rolled through their double helix maneuver, and Corrin shot through the center of their spiral. He cut in front of one, inviting a hastily snapped shot. The TIE pilot took it, splashing lasers against the X-Wing's aft shield. Corrin reinforced the rear shield, then climbed back out onto his original course. He popped in behind the TIE that had been on his tail and took a shot. The TIE starfighter began to whirl away, but it never exploded. It would be an easy target to follow and finish. But the last TIE sprayed laser fire against the X-Wing's shields, providing Corrin with a more immediate threat. Then a bank of light started flashing on the fighter's command console. Sith spawn! My shields are down! Whistler, get the shields back up fast! A counter appeared on his main screen and began counting down from 1.5 minutes. He punched the throttle to full and pushed the fighter through a series of twists and loops that carried it away from the TIE, but no closer to the Y-Wings. The TIE pilot seemed content to circle around, trying to close with Corrin. Then he broke off and streaked in toward the Y-Wings, coming up from beneath them. Heads up, Five, you have incoming! The Y-Wings executed the flip in good order as Corrin closed the gap with the eyeball.
Nine, I have missile lock.
Shoot, Six, shoot! The Y-Wing let a proton torpedo go at point-blank range, but it shot past the eyeball and would have hit the X-Wing had Corrin not rolled fast. Break outside, champions! The Y-Wing pilots complied with Corrin's order, but did so slowly. The TIE spun in on Champion 5, pouring verdant laser bolts into its shields. Corrin eased back on his stick, millimeter by millimeter centering the Imperial fighter on his targeting crosshairs. Behind me? Who? Corrin hit his trigger, tracking ruby energy darts along the TIE's flight path. Even as he saw his lasers hit the eyeball's wings and cockpit, he braced for the other TIE's lasers to burn through his ship. He prepared himself for nothingness. He was not wholly disappointed. Nothing happened. Corrin rolled left and climbed. Find him, Whistler! What about Vengeance? Whistler reported it had gone to light speed. Five, Six, what happened to the other eyeball?
I got him, Nine.
With what, Six?
The missile I launched.
It took Korn a second to make sense of the reply. Then he remembered the missile that had almost hit him as he had come in on the TIE starfighter. Six, you were aiming at the second TIE?
Yes, sir, Lieutenant. Did I do something wrong?
Not wrong, Six, but it could have been more right.
Yes, sir.
Came a sheepish reply that remained full of nervous energy.
Next time, sir.
Yeah, at least we can all be thankful there will be a next time. Korin smiled. Yes, I do appreciate your work, Whistler. He keyed his comm unit. 5-6. Mark the coordinates of your sleeping dupe, then we head in. Wedge Antilles shook hands with the two pilots standing in his office at the rogue base on Nokovzor. Sorry to keep you waiting, but we apparently have had another probe of the system by Imperial forces. The imps didn't make much of a fight of it, but we almost scrambled the rest of the squadron. He walked around to his side of the transparasteel top desk, then waved the two of them to chairs. Welcome to Rogue Squadron. Both pilots smiled and thanked him. Wedge looked first at Errol Nunb, the mouse-eared Celestin female. Captain Nunb, I hope you do not think the fact that you were not selected to join Rogue Squadron 5 months ago reflects in any way a lack of respect for your skills as a pilot. Errol Nunb shook her head, the slender plait of brown hair lashing one shoulder and another.
I harbored no such thought, Commander.
I'd heard stories about you and your brother, especially concerning your exploits on behalf of the Alliance. Both of you have already demonstrated extraordinary innate ability as fighters. The rebuilding of Rogue Squadron involved pilot training, and I didn't think you needed to be with us during the training period.
I understand, sir.
What Nunb left unsaid told Wedge that she understood a lot more than she cared to mention. Rogue Squadron had lost 4 pilots, a full third of its strength in the last 6 months. Under normal circumstances, new pilots would be brought in and trained up to the squadron's level of efficiency. But such training required time, which the New Republic's forces didn't have, so the replacement pilots were being drawn from the best available candidates who expressed an interest in joining the unit. Wedge turned to the red-headed man seated next to the Sulliston. I was surprised, Captain Kraken, to see your name appear on a list of candidates. You've got your own flight group out on the rim, and you're used to flying an A-wing, not an X-wing. Won't you find us a bit slow for your tastes?
I hope not, sir.
Pash Kraken frowned slightly. Kraken was the son of General Aaron Kraken, one of the Alliance's legendary leaders. Aaron Kraken had fabricated an identity for his son that allowed Pash to enter the Imperial Naval Academy. On his first assignment after graduation, Pash led his entire TIE wing in defecting to the Alliance. They became known as Kraken's Flight Group. If you don't mind my asking, why do you want to leave your people behind and join us? Wedge asked the young pilot.
Sir, when I went to the academy, I got a handle on how good I was. The people who've been with me all along think I lead some sort of a charmed life. The new kids coming into the squadron are inculcated into this myth of my invincibility. My pilots are getting careless, and I'm beginning to question myself and my performance. Here, in Rogue Squadron, I'll be measuring myself against the best our side has to offer.
Does your father approve?
He has the utmost respect for you, Commander Antilles.
Wedge smiled.
I think both of you will find the trials of being a rogue a bit more difficult than this interrogation. But I have no doubt, being as how you are rogues now, you'll survive and then some.
Welcome to the unit. Korin welcomed his visitors to the small suite of rooms that he and his wingmate, the Gan named Oral Quirg, had been given on Borlaeus. Korin had countered the dark gray color scheme by bringing in as many lights as he could find and rigging a small holo projector to flash images of other worlds on one wall. A slender brown-haired man entered the suite first and smiled as an image of Alderaan appeared on the wall.
It has been a long while since I saw Weetho Trifalls.
He pointed at the promontory from which a river fell in 3 spectacular waterfalls.
It was as beautiful as that picture, but without the roar of the water, it seems dead.
Corin didn't need to see the sorrow and pain on Tycho Selku's face to know what word had gone unspoken. The Alderaanians had suffered a deep emotional wound when their home world had been destroyed. "I apologize for that, sir. The projector chooses images at random." Tycho's face brightened. "Don't apologize. I may miss my home, but that does not mean I dislike seeing holographs of it." The second visitor shuffled through the doorway, a metallic black droid with the body of a 3PO unit and the crested clamshell head of a spaceport control droid.
"Good evening, Lieutenant Horn. May I say I was pleased to receive your invitation to visit this evening because I am finding Captain Numb a bit brusque for my tastes."
Corin flicked a green-eyed glance at Tycho. "Do you want to do it, or should I?"
"Do what? May I help?"
Tycho smiled.
"We couldn't do it without you, M'Tray. Shut up. Shut up."
With Tycho's third repetition of the command, the droid's arms snapped to its sides, and its head canted forward sharply until its chin almost touched its chest plate. Corin shook his head and waved Tycho to the couch.
"Every time I see that little routine, I'm amazed."
A month previously, they had discovered that a previous owner in Hoth had programmed two personalities into M'Tray. One was that of a protocol droid. But another, a slick trader in black market goods, could be brought forth if the droid was asked to scrounge something. When told to shut up, he became a simple terminal that gave access to all its data. Corin told Tycho he had had Whistler do a basic diagnostic scan of M'Tray.
"The scrounging circuitry is the only unusual stuff in there. I don't think he's a security risk."
"That's good," Tycho smiled.
"And it was good work getting the data from Hoth. Most of those files are still classified, aren't they?"
"All of them are, but Whistler's got slicing code that can get him through low-level security stuff." Corin shrugged. "Those files are easy to break. Unlike the routines used to seal portions of your record." Tycho barely missed a beat.
"If there was something you wanted to know about me, you could have asked."
"Would I get a straight answer?" Tycho blinked.
"Why would you think I'd lie to you?"
Corin jerked a thumb toward the closed door. "There are two Alliance security officers at my door, correct? They're waiting to escort you back to your quarters, right?"
"Yes. So?"
"So General Somm, the leader of Defender Wing, thinks you're some sort of threat to the Alliance. Shouldn't that make me wonder about you?"
"It could." Tycho shrugged his shoulders. "Then again, you could think about what you know about me and decide for yourself if I can be trusted or not."
Corin had only known Tycho for 6 months, but in that time, Tycho had repeatedly flown an unarmed shuttle into dangerous situations to recover pilots who had been shot out of their ships. On one of those occasions, he had saved Corin's life by providing him a data feed that let him target incoming TIE interceptors. It had been a brave thing to do, and one that could have gotten Tycho killed.
"Sir, I have trusted you in the past, and I'll go on trusting you in the future because I've not seen you do anything wrong. And I apologize for trying to slice out your file. I guess having worked with Corsac has just honed my sense of paranoia."
"But you'd still like to know what happened to me 2 years ago?"
"Yes, sir."
Tycho shrugged with resignation.
"Fine, but it goes no further, right?"
Corin held his hand up.
"On my honor."
Tycho fixed him with a crystal blue stare for a second, then nodded.
"I was flying a freighter for the Alliance, gathering data on Coruscant defenses, when I was captured by the Imperials. They hit me with a Stokely stun spray and I was out. When I finally awakened again, I was on a transport coming out of hyperspace. We grounded and I found I'd been taken to Lusankia."
"Lusankia?
You know it?"
"Only by the most vague and nasty of rumors. People who come out of there are human remote bombs. They do horrible things when the Empire activates them."
Tycho clenched his hands. "I know. I know. What's worse, no one has ever mentioned Lusankia before they have acted. The clues are always found later. But with me, after 3 months of interrogation and detention, I guess they decided I was useless. I was in bad shape, catatonic for most of my time at Lusankia, so I remember almost nothing. Then I was let go. They shipped me to Akritar Penal Colony. I escaped and made my way back to the Alliance. I was debriefed for 2 months, but they couldn't find anything wrong with me.
And they hadn't found anything wrong with the other people who had been to Lysenko either, right?
No. The only difference between me and them was that I remembered having been there. It is the opinion of General Salm and some of the others that I was allowed to retain my memory, and that my escape was engineered just so I could return to the Alliance and betray it. Corrin's eyes narrowed.
So you don't even know if you are an Imperial agent waiting to happen or not?
The Alderaanian's shoulders slumped. I know I'm not. Being able to prove it is something else again.
The giddiness bubbling up inside him surprised Wedge as he slipped into his chair behind Admiral Akbar. They're actually here. The Provisional Council. I never thought I'd see the day.
Mon Mothma, still looking strong and serene despite the traces of gray in her hair, stood at her place at the circular table.
I call this meeting of the Provisional Council to order. Counselor Organa, if you would be so kind as to update us on your attempts to open a dialogue with Warlord Zinj.
The woman at Mon Mothma's right hand stood. Though she wore a pale green gown gathered loosely at the waist with a silver belt, Wedge couldn't help but see Princess Leia ready for battle, the way he had seen her so many times before.
I have attempted through numerous channels to make contact with Warlord Zinj, but have been rebuffed every time. It appears he believes his possession of the superstar destroyer Iron Fist has made him into a force to be reckoned with in the galaxy. Right now he is collecting data on the Alliance.
Borsk Phalia's cream-colored fur rippled as he stood.
Counselor Organa, if there is no information coming out of his organization, how do you know he is seeking data on us?
Admiral Akbar nodded to Leia.
If I might answer that, Counselor. A little less than a standard week ago, a freighter appeared in the Pyrea system. It was challenged, and it responded with the proper passage codes. But a member of Rogue Squadron chose to do a closer check. The freighter launched 6 TIEs, 4 starfighters, and 2 bombers. Then it fled, and all but one of the smaller ships were destroyed. Examination of the surviving bomber and interrogation of the pilot indicates the ship was sent by Warlord Zinj to confirm our conquest of Pyrea, and, if the opportunity presented itself, to strike at the base.
Borsk's face hardened.
And your people let the freighter escape?
Akbar's lids drifted down for a moment.
Counselor Phalia, the freighter was fully armed and deployed 6 fighter craft. On post, we had 2 Y-wings and 1 X-wing. Although outnumbered, our forces eliminated the 6 fighters and damaged the freighter, driving it off. The freighter fled before the fighter screen was eliminated, but even if it had not, engaging it would have been suicidal.
I thought such missions were Rogue Squadron's specialty.
Doman Beyrus, a flaxen-haired woman who represented the Corellian exiles on the council, stood.
I would prefer to cut directly to the focus of this meeting instead of watching my colleagues scratch and claw their way there. Zinj knows, as do we, that whichever force is able to wrest Coruscant from the grip of the Imperial government will be seen as the legitimate, or at least strongest, claimant to governance. The Pyrea system was taken to be a stepping stone to Coruscant, and Zinj now knows we do have it.
The Wookiee and Sulistan representatives nodded in agreement with Doman. Mon Mothma looked up.
Admiral Akbar, if you are prepared to give your presentation.
I am.
Akbar stood. Above the mirrored plate in the center of the table, the holographic image of a world appeared.
This is Coruscant. It was the administrative center of the old Republic and retained that function when the Emperor seized power. Coruscant is still seen as the heart of the galaxy, and many look to it as the center of order and authority, no matter who controls it. After the Emperor's death, a provisional government was overthrown by a coup led by Isani Isard.
As Akbar spoke, the planet dissolved into an image of Isard, a tall, slender human woman, with long black hair streaked with white at the sides. She seemed possessed of the vitality that the rebellion had begun to sap from Mon Mothma. Her most striking feature was her mismatched eyes. The right one was an icy blue that, as much as her severe demeanor, had earned her the nickname Iceheart. By contrast, her left eye was molten red, Akbar continued.
Although Isard is not from a military background, she has not allowed the defenses of the Imperial homeworld to slacken.
A hollow of the defense system appeared.
Outermost are the Golan Space Defense Stations. They are comparable in power to a Star Destroyer, and all of them will have to be neutralized. In addition, there are approximately 7 Victory-class Star Destroyers on station at Coruscant. There are ground-based fighter groups as well, and the orbital mirror stations and low-orbit skyhooks may also have been armed.
Akbar clasped his hands behind his back.
As formidable as all that is, the primary problem in taking Coruscant are the overlapping defense shields.
2 spheres constructed of hexagons appeared to encase the world. One moved in the direction of its orbit. The other moved in the opposite direction.
To take Coruscant, we must eliminate the shields. There are a number of ways to do this, but none of them is simple. A direct assault would cost us more dearly than most Death Star battles combined. I think the only reasonable approach to taking Coruscant is to blockade the world.
Mon Mothma frowned.
The problem with the blockade is twofold. The first is that it would keep our fleet at one place for an extended period of time. This would allow Isard to recall the Imperial fleet to drive us off.
Akbar nodded.
Or it could encourage naval officers in far-flung regions to sever their ties with the Empire, breaking it up further.
Giving us many warlords like Zinj to worry about. Borsk's words seemed almost purred.
Pinning our fleet in one place would also allow Zinj to prey upon New Republic worlds.
Akbar opened his hands.
Yes, what you suggest might happen.
Mon Mothma raised a hand to cut him off.
The second problem is that the people of Coruscant will suffer. You know there are vast populations of aliens and other outcasts who dwell deep in the shadowed canyons of that metro world, in a place they call Invisic, for Invisible Sector. They barely survive as it is.
Akbar sighed.
This I know very well, Chief Counselor Mothma, but you face me with an impossible task. It is possible to batter our way in there, yet even if the damage we would sustain is more acceptable from a diplomatic and political point of view, it leaves us with a reality that is militarily unacceptable. Coruscant, if taken in haste, will fall to another enemy force just as quickly, and all we have fought for in this rebellion will be for naught.
Wedge opened his arms wide and stretched. Standing on the patio of the Nokozor facility's only above-ground building, he looked out over rolling hills carpeted with golden grasses.
Would that some of this tranquility would sneak into our deliberations.
Wedge spun around.
Highness!
Leia smiled at him.
Wedge, please, not so formal. We've known each other for too long to stand on ceremony.
He nodded sheepishly.
I know that, but things have changed.
Things may have changed, Wedge, but not us.
Are all the council meetings this difficult?
Some are. This one in particular is prickly. Of course, Akbar knows the blockade plan won't work, which is why he advanced it. Now, if he retreats from that position, he shows himself to be reasonable and willing to compromise. This means the other side must compromise, too.
Wedge frowned because he'd completely missed the significance of what to Leia was obvious.
I think finding enemy ships and shooting them up is easier than this politics stuff.
Leia gave Wedge's hand a squeeze.
It wasn't that long ago that we scarcely dared dream we'd have these problems to deal with.
Yeah, in those days it seemed as if our children and grandchildren would still be fighting the Empire.
Indeed.
She laughed again.
So, Wedge Antilles, any prospect of you contributing to the rebellion's next generation?
Me? I have all the children I need in my squadron. What about you and Han?
We're happy when we get to see each other. It's kind of rough on a woman to finally admit you love someone and then have him frozen in carbonite for the better part of a year. Then again, during that time he couldn't find little ways to irritate me.
That's his nature, though. He's chaos incarnate. What about Luke? How's he doing?
He's doing well. He's continuing his Jedi training. He's also been traveling around the galaxy trying to recover any artifacts or documents that will fill in the background of the Jedi Knights. Leia produced a comm link from within the sleeve of her gown. Counselor Organa here.
Leia, it's Mon Mothma. If you have a moment, I have some things to discuss with you.
On my way. Leia snapped the comm link off, then kissed Wedge on the cheek. You may be right. We have changed. But I'm thankful we can still sit together and relax for a minute or two. I'll see you later, Wedge.
Goodbye, Leia.
Wedge stood as she departed.
Change we have, Leia. But change for the better, I think. He smiled.
Whistler's warble made Corin look up at the timer on his X-Wing's main display. 5 minutes until we come out of hyperspace. The countdown marked the end of a two-leg run from Borlaeus to Mrist that took a total of 5 hours to complete. Taking the precaution of hitting a transit system before arriving at Mrist struck Corin as unnecessary, if the intelligence they were reacting to was correct. Our target already knows where we live, Corin thought. Merix Terek had arrived at Borlaeus aboard her ship, the Pulsar Skate, after a trade run that had included a visit to Mrist. Being a smuggler of no small skill, she had pulled a copy of the local system traffic reports from Mrist Control to see who was operating in her area and might prove to be competition. One of the ships on the list was a freighter by the name of Vengeance Dara IV. When she arrived on Borlaeus, she had asked the Rogue Squadron droid Imtray for any information he had on the ship, and that had resulted in Corin's recon flight. Corin was finding it hard to concentrate because of two bits of information the squadron had received a couple of hours prior to the mission. The first was confirmation by Typhiran officials of Bror Jace's death. Bror had been the hottest rogue pilot in the squadron's first 5 missions, amassing 22 kills to eclipse Corin's mark by 1. Upon his return from his last mission, he was called back to Typhara because of a relative's impending death, but he had never arrived at his destination. The Typharans reported that an Imperial Interdictor cruiser had been working in that general area, so the scenario appeared to be that Jace had been pulled out of hyperspace, jumped by TIEs, and destroyed.
The Interdictor cruiser had been reported to be the Black Asp.
It might have been coincidence, but the Rogues had fought against that ship in their first engagement. Corin would have been inclined to let this pass for coincidence, except for the second bit of information that came to him. Imtray had been trying to locate information on Gil Bastra, the man who had been Corin's superior at Corsec, and had found a report that confirmed that Gil had been killed during a botched interrogation by intelligence agent Kirtan Lure. Lure had been the Imperial liaison to Corin's Corsec division, and no love had been lost between them.
I disliked him even before he let my father's murderer walk free, Corin thought.
Corin rubbed the medallion that hung in his breastbone. His father had kept the medal as a lucky charm. The X-Wing swept up and around the fringes of Mrist's atmosphere and caught their first glimpse of the Vengeance glinting in sunlight.
Whistler, what's that ship next to the Vengeance?
The droid displayed the answer on Corin's secondary monitor. The ship was a medium-sized transport calling itself Contrum's Pride. The two ships were moving in tandem, remaining steady. Corin keyed his comm unit. The Pride is transferring cargo to, or taking it from, the Vengeance. Pash Kraken's voice filled the comm channel.
We have two for the taking, then. S-foils in attack position.
Corin reached up and hit the switch that locked the stabilizers into the position that gave the X-Wing its name. He saw the 4 fighters in 2-flight move out under Kraken's command. Corin served as Captain Numb's wingman, with Rezati Ener and Arisi Dalaret in Rogues 7 and 8 completing 1-flight. Captain Numb was ordering the 2 ships to surrender when, as if summoned by her words, a dozen TIE starfighters and interceptors boiled out of the gap between the 2 ships. Corin fired off 2 pairs of lasers, then spoke to Numb. I have your wing, 12. No sooner had he said it than Numb's ship sideslipped to port, then dove toward the planet.
Corin had no idea why she'd done that, but he followed her as best he could. As she pulled up and out of the dive, he saw her lasers flash and the lead eyeball exploded. Nice shooting, 12! Her only reply was a snap roll to track the course of another tie. Her quad shot clipped the wing on the eyeball and sent it spinning into space.
You have lead, 9.
As ordered, 12. Corin glanced at his scanner and found a pair of interceptors angling in from above. He pulled back on his stick, rolled and acquired his first target. It took him 4 shots to do what none had done in 1. But the effect was no less spectacular. The laser bolts burned a line of holes in the interceptor's canted port wing. It tore away and smashed into the ball cockpit. Ahead, the Vengeance was losing a volume of laser fire. Corin saw 4 pairs of proton torpedoes shot by Pash Kraken, head in at the waspy freighter from widely disparate angles. Corin watched admiringly as all the torpedoes hit, bringing down Vengeance's forward and aft shields amid a storm of brilliant explosions. Apparently, Mr. Kraken can fly very well, Corin thought. Corin rolled 90 degrees to starboard to face the eyeball that was chasing, giving the guy the worst targeting profile possible. With a flick of his thumb, he brought the torpedo targeting program up and squeezed the trigger. The proton torpedo tore the TIE's starboard wing off, sending the starfighter into a flat spin. Corin shifted around to see if there were any more fighters available, but he found none. He keyed his comm unit and said to Errol Nunn, 9 is clear, 12.
I copy, 12. Come to a heading of 173 and orbit Vengeance at 3 clicks. Risk Disaster Control is scrambling for recovery operations.
As ordered, 12. Corin smiled. And Captain?
Yes, 9.
Impressive flying out there. Welcome to Rogue Squadron. You're definitely one of us.
Thanks, 9. It's nice to be home.
At the sound of Asani Isard's voice, a jolt ran through Kirtan Lur. He whirled away from his workstation and dropped to one knee before the towering holographic projection.
Madam Director, I am at your service. That was my impression.
The chilly tone in her voice warned him that she was not in a mood to tolerate mistakes.
Your report on the incompetence of the Black Asp's flight coordinator in the broad Jace matter was quite thorough. I wanted Jace alive so I could utilize him at Lusankia. Your report makes it clear that Major Wharton knew this, but took no steps to guard against a kill.
Thank you, Madam Director.
I've received another request from General Derricote for subjects. This time he wants Corin?
Lur brushed a hand back over his Black Widow's peak.
Yes, Madam Director. General Derricote's cadre of scientists have made the initial breakthrough in their research on Gamorreans. The virus has an incubation period of a month and is fatal in 75% of the cases.
The incubation period is too long. It must be faster.
Yes, they know that. Derricote believes part of the incubation period problem is tied to the sluggishness of the Gamorrean metabolism. Corin are not as good a platform to guarantee cross-species susceptibility, but their metabolic rate is higher than that of Gamorreans.
Very well. Give him what he wants, and tell him I want the incubation period cut to a week. All must be ready for the rebellion when they decide to strike at Imperial Center.
Wedge watched Admiral Akbar rise in response to Mon Mothma's invitation.
Thank you, Chief Counselor. My staff and I have spent considerable time since yesterday's session reviewing and analyzing all pertinent files concerning Coruscant. While we were still of the opinion that a blockade is the preferable course of action from the military point of view, we are willing to concede that other factors may make this option unavailable to us.
Akbar pressed both of his hands against the tabletop.
Before we can approach Coruscant, we have to determine the location of the defenses. The layout of the planet is always changing. Huge construction droids are constantly grinding up old buildings and creating new ones. While we do have agents on the ground who supply us with as much data as possible, they aren't trained to provide us with the military information we need.
Doman Beiris looked over at Akbar.
You want to send a team of military specialists in as a prelude to moving on the world?
It is a stormy sea, but this venture is the first stroke in calming it.
Doman looked over at General Aaron Kraken. Though white hair dominated the red on the general's head, the green eyes and sharp cheekbones made the resemblance to his son unmistakable.
General Kraken, this sort of intelligence operation falls into your area of expertise. Are you prepared to handle it?
I am prepared to use the assets I have developed on Coruscant to aid Admiral Akbar's effort. However, Admiral Akbar has suggested, and I agree, that Rogue Squadron is a natural choice for conducting an undercover operation.
Borsk Phalia's creamy fur rippled along his shoulders. He fixed Wedge with a violet stare.
You accept this mission, Commander Antilles?
In principle, yes. We need to be able to pinpoint power plants, communication centers, and other sites that we can hit to disrupt Imperial command and control functions. We need to pull the shields down, then make them deaf and blind. If we give them no power to operate their defensive weapons, we further guarantee our success.
Leia nodded thoughtfully.
You said you needed to pinpoint targets. In what way does your piloting skill enhance your ability to do this?
Counselor, it is one thing to identify the locations we need to hit, but hitting them is another thing entirely. As a pilot, I can identify and evaluate the possible approaches to a target. I can also help determine how much in the way of firepower will be necessary to eliminate it.
Borsk Phalia set forward.
Despite my reservations, I agree with my Mon Calamari compatriot that intelligence gathering is necessary. Disruption of normal Imperial functions on Coruscant by Rogue Squadron or General Kraken's people would also be seen as positive.
Akbar clasped his hands behind his back.
I agree. Disruption is not necessary, but it could be effective, and even helpful.
I would think it could be very helpful, especially if it served as a distraction for Imperial authorities who might be working against Rogue Squadron. That seems reasonable, does it not?
Akbar nodded.
Perhaps.
Wedge sensed in the slow delivery of Akbar's reply an extreme reluctance to grant the Bothan his point.
Leia told me Admiral Akbar would have to compromise, and he has retreated from the blockade. It would seem Borsk Phalia wants him to concede more.
I have a little operation that I think will function very well as an adjunct to what you want to do and to distract the Imperials.
And that is?
Phalia hit a button on his datapad, and the holoplate in the middle of the table displayed a small red planet whose atmosphere escaped into space like smoke drifting from dying embers. A single large moon orbited it, plunging in and out of the wispy tendrils of atmosphere.
Kessel!
Wedge shook his head. One of Rogue Squadron's recruits, Lujane Forge, the first of its new members to be slain, had come from Kessel and still had family there who worked as educators. The Empire had maintained a penal colony on Kessel that provided slave labor for harvesting spice. After the Emperor's death, the inmates had taken control of the planet. They administered the mines and the vast atmosphere factories that freed enough oxygen and other gases from the rocks to let people exist on the surface using rebreathers. It was a brutal existence. Borsk Phalia stood.
The planet you see before you is Kessel. It was once a detention center where the Empire housed dissidents as well as hardened felons. When the Emperor died, the inmates took control of the center and chose a Rybet by the name of Morath Duul to administrate. The Imperials and the political prisoners were sent to work in the spice mines. Now, on Coruscant, there are substantial remnants of the Black Sun crime organization. As did many of you, I thought Lord Shizor's grab for power was doomed from the start. But the Black Sun organization allowed him to contemplate opposing Vader. I propose selecting and freeing certain Black Sun officers from Kessel and bringing them into Coruscant. There, they would bring the disparate parts of Black Sun together and work to sabotage the Empire.
Akbar gave Phalia a wall-eyed stare.
You want to revive the scourge of the Black Sun?
Not revive, just focus. The enemy of our enemy is our friend.
Doman nodded.
It seems Counselor Phalia is merely suggesting you fight fire with fire.
The Mon Calamari half closed his eyes.
I do not like fire analogies, as we say on Mon Calamari. Frolic in the surf and get drowned by the undertow.
Leia stood. It may well be that in the future we will regret any sort of alliance with the remnants of Black Sun. The fact is, however, that winning the goodwill of at least part of Coruscant's underworld cannot hurt us.